Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFURL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and for those of you who may have just joined us, my guest, she's a first-time guest on this podcast, Katya Gold, an analyst and political risk consultant, and a fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis, or SEPA. She's an expert on Eurasia and has a wealth of experience studying Belarus. Welcome, Katya.
Hello, Steve. Great to be here.
All right. It's great to have you on the podcast. Now, I mentioned Belarus, and we are going to focus on Belarus today, mainly on its relationship with Russia and its role in Russia's war against Ukraine, which this role is substantial, but falls short of what Russian President Vladimir Putin presumably would like for Belarusian troops to be fighting alongside Russian forces in Ukraine. There are some Belarusians fighting on the Ukrainian side, but Belarusian government has not sent its troops into Belarus. So my first question is a pretty simple one. Why isn't this happening? After all, Belarus is the closest thing that Russia has to an ally, particularly in the military sense. And the two countries are in an arrangement they call the Union State. They have been for many years. Alexander Lukashenko's regime has suppressed the opposition in Belarus in a way that's arguably even harsher than Putin has in Russia, particularly since the deeply disputed election in 2020. Moreover, many of the Russian troops that crossed into Ukraine from the north and headed toward Kiev when Putin launched the large-scale invasion in February crossed into Ukraine from Belarus. And when they encountered fierce resistance, which prompted a Russian retreat back across the border in a matter of weeks, some of the wounded were treated in Belarus. And a number of Russians conscripted more recently in the massive mobilization that Putin decreed in September have been trained or are being trained in Belarus. So again, my question is, why all these forms of cooperation and logistical support, but no direct involvement by Belarusian forces on Russia's side in Moscow's war against Ukraine?
Well, I think, Steve, you have just partly answered this question when you mentioned all what Lukashenko has already done for Russia. And in a nutshell, I think that at the moment, at this stage in the war, sending Belarusian troops across the border would be more risky for Putin than actually using Belarus for all the reasons that you have mentioned. There are several aspects in this. Well, first of all, we know that the majority of the Belarusian public does not want Belarusian troops to be part of this war. The latest poll showed that 97% of Belarusians do not want Belarusian troops to fight in Ukraine. And that those figures, to some extent, also reflect what is happening within the apparatus, within the general staff of the Lukashenko regime, the military regime. Not only does the public not want it, but most likely Lukashenko's generals also do not want that. If Lukashenko were to send the troops to the Ukrainian border, across the border to fight in Ukraine, he would probably lose the 25-30% of support that he has at the moment. It could destabilize the situation in Belarus. It could easily spark a new protest. We can see Belarusian troops actually leaving the Belarusian army and joining the Ukrainian side. We can see all sorts of things that could come up and all sorts of risks for Putin on the one hand. On the other hand, if we look at the Belarusian army, it's really not very experienced. It has no combat experience whatsoever. The numbers are rather large. They are 45,000 troops on paper, but this is just on paper. Most of these people actually, the army is not does not have the full presence. Most of these people, they have to be drafted. We really know that the best part of the Belarusian army is about 8,000, 9,000 people, the so-called special operations army, which Lukashenko used to some extent to disperse the protests in Belarus in 2020. And these people send them across the border to Ukraine, who have no combat experience. They have very poor military equipment. This is kind of, you know, light infantry army. They don't really have tanks or any other proper equipment. Again, they will probably be killed and they will not bring so much benefit to Putin. And of course, Lukashenko would not want to send this part of the army because then he will be left alone. So for all these reasons, it seems that Lukashenko is much better off, and so is Putin, having the Belarusian, having Belarus provide all what it has already provided to the Russian army. And this is enormous what Belarus has done. So I think we sometimes forget how actually helpful Lukashenko has been, comparing it to sending the troops. We know that over 700 missiles have been shot from Belarus into Ukraine. We know that indeed Belarusian doctors treated Russian soldiers. We know that now newly mobilized Russian soldiers are being also trained in Belarus, using the military ground in Belarus. And we also know about all sorts of logistical supplies that Belarus gives to the Russian army. And just again, to mention and wrap up my answer, a couple of more figures. We know that about 65,000 ammunition have been sent from Belarus. We know that Lukashenko sold to Russia about 100 tanks, about 20 armed vehicles. So all that has been enormous help and probably much better than what in an experienced Belarusian army would have been on the battlefield in Ukraine.
Well, thanks very much, Katya. I actually learned quite a bit there. Very, very interesting. I mean, I guess I'd been sort of aware for a long time of the fact that I think just from observations that a big part of Lukashenko's popularity kind of throughout his rule, like including in the 90s when Russia was fighting its wars in Chechnya, was that the Belarusian soldiers and young men were not being sent into battle. And I think Lukashenko, that may have been a key part of his popularity kind of throughout over the years. So to kind of throw that away now, you know, even after the repressions of, you know, the past couple of years in Belarus, it could be dangerous for him. But you also mentioned the idea, which I hadn't really thought of and didn't really occur to me, that it's probably the kind of support that Belarus and Lukashenko have provided up to now is probably actually more useful and less dangerous for Putin than if Belarus were to send in troops into Ukraine. So thanks very much for that. One thing we mentioned the various ways that Belarus is cooperating now. One other thing recently, apparently the Russian defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, visited Belarus briefly on Saturday to sign a new protocol on bilateral Belarus-Russia regional military cooperation. So is that another kind of aspect of this support that Belarus is providing?
I would not read too much into this very brief visit because indeed something that they signed on Saturday had already been agreed early in August between Putin and Lukashenko. So that was kind of a step in a way expected. Also, it probably, again, we don't know, there was no information given following the meeting, but it seems that there were some indications that the protocol may cover more, again, logistical support, more military side equipment support. And we also know that at the moment, for example, well, Belarus has always been very helpful to Russia in terms of providing some electronic software for Russian military equipment. That has continued and has expanded recently. And we know that, for example, during the meeting, during the signing of this protocol, the head of the Belarusian military industrial complex was also present, as well as the deputy prime minister responsible for industry. So there were some indications that suggested that perhaps the protocol was more about getting more logistical and military support from Belarus than anything else. And again, as I said earlier, it follows from the meeting that Lukashenko and Putin had earlier in August.
I see. Thanks very much for that. And of course, I mean, over the years, there have been plenty of meetings and before the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February, in which it always seemed like Putin might be on the verge of finally kind of roping Lukashenko in and you know, making Belarus something closer to a part of Russia. But, you know, that hasn't happened. And I guess it's kind of unclear how things may move after the war, whenever that is. But something to keep an eye on. Now, the other question I'd like to ask is somewhat related, or at least it may be. It's about the death late last month of Vladimir Makey, who was 64 years old and had been Lukashenko's foreign minister for over a decade. And I believe he had a role in Lukashenko's administration before that. Now, state media reports in Belarus gave no cause of death when they announced the news on November 26th. And as far as I know, they still have not given an official cause of death, but there have been reports that Makey died of a heart attack. However, there's been a lot of suspicion surrounding his death and speculation that Russia may have been behind it. As an article in the Washington Post put it, quote, his death provoked a blizzard of speculation that he might have been clandestinely killed by Russia, with myriad competing theories on the motive, unquote. So, Katya, my question is why? Why would the death of a 64-year-old man reportedly from a heart attack generate so much suspicion?
Well, yes, I think in this sort of fog of war that there are lots of different conspiracy theories and things seem to be suspicious and murky. I think the immediate trigger for that was the publication which came just the day before the death of Minister Makey, the publication by Robert Lansing Institute, which said that Russia wants to assassinate Lukashenko and put instead of him the current head of the Collective Security Treaty Organization, who is a Belarusian politician, member of Belarusian administration, instead of Lukashenko. So that was the immediate trigger. But there were also other aspects, of course, which looked a bit suspicious. Minister Makey was supposed to travel to Poland to participate in the meeting of the OSCE a few days after he died. Makey was also perhaps seen in some Russian circles as an agent of the West, as they called him, because indeed in 2015 through 2020, Makey was sort of Lukashenko's right hand in the West. Lukashenko does not know how to talk to the West. He does not understand how things work. Whereas Makey, he was probably fit in the role of this European diplomat who knew very well how to speak to the European Union, how to speak to the United States. He spoke also Belarusian. He tried to promote Belarusian culture. And he seemed as a soft sort of diplomat compared to Lavrov, for example. And that sort of created his image in the West that Lukashenko listens to him, that he has some power. And all that combined made all these narratives probably appear, emerge, that McKay may have been murdered by Russia, because Russia, McKay was the last remaining connection that Lukashenko had to the West. But in fact, McKay, first of all, was very loyal servant to Lukashenko. He was never seen within Belarus as someone who had some independent thinking, someone who could stand up to his views. And he was and will be remembered as someone who loyally pursued the lines that his boss was directing him towards. What was happening in 2015 through to 2020, this rapprochement between Belarus and the European Union that we saw, it was really coming from Lukashenko himself, when Lukashenko got very scared after Russia occupied Crimea. And Lukashenko thought that he should do his kind of more, be more active in his maneuvering, famous maneuvering, to be playful a bit more to the West. And he released political prisoners in Belarus. And McKay was the mouth speaker of Lukashenko. He was not acting independently. So all these together, all these arguments, perhaps, they created this narrative that he may have been assassinated, murdered. Of course, we don't know, but McKay was 64. He was obviously under a lot of pressure. Perhaps he was not very happy how things have developed under 2020, because indeed all his foreign policy that he worked so hard on basically became cancelled following the protest in 2020. And that was definitely very sad for him. We know also that he had some family issues. We know that his eldest son worked in the foreign ministry and he defected. He openly said that he does not support the line of Lukashenko. And McKay spoke in one of his interviews. He said that this is his very painful moment for him. So obviously, McKay was under a lot of stress, and it's very likely and possible that indeed, his death was natural.
All right, thanks very much. That's very comprehensive. I really provides a lot of good information. I think you mentioned the kind of a rapprochement that was happening for several years before the election, in which Lukashenko declared a landslide victory in August 2020, and the opposition and many Belarusians said that he had stolen the election and cheated. And then everything that happened after that, the huge clampdown on protests and the opposition. So that put an end to that, and then there was the Russian invasion of Ukraine took things even further. You point out McKay was kind of the voice or the mouthpiece of Lukashenko, and his representative for those, those efforts at rapprochement in those years up till 2019. So it does seem natural that perhaps in the West and maybe in Russia as well, he could be seen as somebody who is kind of, if not pro-Western and if not independent, somebody who is, more likely to go a different way, I suppose, even if there's no evidence that he ever did do anything kind of independent of Lukashenko. I guess my other question would be, I have read that while he was not independent, I think everyone agrees on that, I have read that he was kind of an opponent of being too close to Russia. I don't know. Could you comment on that? Is there evidence of the idea that he was kind of would resist or was against being closer to bringing Belarus closer to Russia?
Well, we don't really have much evidence to that. The only, I think, the main idea that kind of reinforces this narrative is that McKay comes from Western Belarus and like Western Ukraine. Hrodno in Western Belarus is well known for being a bit more pro-Western and being obviously more independent of Russia. And McKay indeed tried to use Belarusian, the Belarusian language in his public speaking. He tried to put on some national clothes like Vyshyvanka, and he definitely tried a bit, at least in Minsk, he tried to promote this image of independent Belarus. Whether that was genuine or not, we don't know. I remember from my earlier years working for the OSCE, there were rumors within the Ministry of Affairs that, and McKay at the time, he had it, the presidential administration, that people in the foreign ministry who tried to bring Belarus closer to the West, they were actually blocked, their efforts were blocked by Vladimir McKay, who was at the time, as I said, the head of the presidential administration. So we don't know. We do know that he tried to portray himself as obviously more independent, pro-Belarusian, but not so much liberal, perhaps, or pro-Western.
Right. And I guess his comments on, well, both on the Russian invasion of Ukraine and also on the government crackdown in Belarus, I don't think he ever said anything that was kind of indicated any opposition to that publicly, and certainly he made some statements that were supportive of the invasion. I guess that kind of remained a mystery. One thing I'll just go back and mention, you know, just over the years, so much kind of pendulum swinging by Lukashenko. I interviewed him actually in 2010, and at that time he was on one of his kind of more pro-Russian and anti-West swings of the pendulum. But then, as you mentioned, for several years kind of went back after the invasion of Crimea, after Russia occupied and seized control of Crimea. You know, there are a lot of concerns in Belarus and other former Soviet republics, are we next sort of thing. So that, I guess, prompted a move in the other direction.
Yes, and I just would like to add that Vladimir McKay was the head of the presidential administration in 2010 when the first big crackdown on the Belarusian protest happened, when about 700 people got arrested within a few days, and that was fully orchestrated and supported by him.
Very good, very good point. All right, we are getting a little short on time, but we can take a few questions if people have any. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, you can raise your hand by hitting the button in Twitter Spaces to request to speak. You can also DM us or post the question as a reply to the Twitter space. Okay, I see we have a question from Peter S. Peter S., would you like to go ahead?
Right. Hi. You want me to speak now?
Yes.
Yeah, it was really interesting just listening to that, and it ticks a lot, lots of boxes with me. I've always seen this as a war of the survival of dictators, and it's... the biggest threat to Russia is Ukraine going into democracy, becoming prosperous and right on their doorstep. And the second biggest threat to Russia, I think, is Belarus, because that is unstable. Lukashenko, I always felt, seems to be a very unwilling partner in all this. He goes along with it. I actually think he... I actually think if he doesn't support Putin and Putin's imperialistic expansion plans, he could be removed and some other sort of administration put in place, which Putin is happier with. I might have got that wrong, I'm not sure. But actually, just very quickly, I think their intention at the moment is to desperately hold on to the four annexed areas, which is, their intention all along was to take the coastal zones down to Moldova and around. That's been kind of delayed. So I think they're desperate to hold on to the coastal zones they've got at the moment. And I think he will intend to have another go at Kyiv probably in the spring. And that's what he's preparing Belarus for, an ultimate push there, because that would really finish things off if he could grab that city.
Thank you. Katya, any comment on that, the idea that Putin may be preparing for a new invasion from Belarus in the spring?
Yes, I think it's possible. We certainly cannot rule it out. We know that at the moment there aren't enough Russian troops on the ground in Belarus. There are different estimates, but I think they're between 5,000 and 10,000 troops. And we remember that back in February, there were about 20,000 of them who started the invasion. And obviously, this year, if it happens next year, at least probably 20,000 would be needed. And Ukraine is far better prepared, so maybe more. So that remains to be seen. As I said, should not be ruled out. We also know that Belarusian own troops are being checked at the moment, and that check has been ongoing since April. Particularly recently, various drafting enlistment officers have been intensifying their verification procedures of those who are capable to serve in the army. Politically, I think that if Putin were to become desperate, if he saw that there is no way for him to win the war, and that he would, and if he decides that he would like to try and take over Kyiv again and would need Belarus for this, he would definitely be able to squeeze this out of Lukashenko. Lukashenko is ultimately dependent on Putin. I think Lukashenko would be, again, quite happy to provide its territory as long as Putin keeps him in power. Lukashenko is quite dependent on Putin politically and economically. Russia has become now the largest importer of Belarusian goods after the sanctions started working, the sanctions that the West imposed on Belarus. Russia also gives direct financial assistance to Belarus, which again, the EU and other international financial institutions stopped giving Belarus after the 2020 crackdown on the protests in Belarus. So if Putin were to decide either to use Belarusian territory for the invasion, or if he were to decide that he needs even the small contingent of the Belarusian army, I think he would be able to twist Lukashenko's arms so that would happen.
All right, thanks very much for that. And of course, there's a lot of time still until spring. Unfortunately, it looks like the war may certainly continue through then, with more just death and destruction wreaked by Russia. Any other questions? Be happy to take one or two more questions if you have any. Just give it a few more moments. Again, you can hit the button to request to speak, or send a DM, or post your question as a reply in the Twitter space. Okay, looks like no more, last chance, but if not, we can wrap it up here. And I really think Katya's given us some great insights, really learned a lot here. So let's wrap it up. And Katya, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. I hope we can do it again sometime soonish. Once again, I've been speaking to Katya Gaud, an analyst and political risk consultant and a fellow at SEPA, the Center for European Policy Analysis. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. As I mentioned at the start, this conversation will also be published as a podcast, and you can subscribe to The Week Ahead in Russia and other RFERL podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Google, and other podcast platforms. I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia, and please keep an eye out for my newsletter, The Week in Russia, on Friday. Thanks for listening.